Dublab.
Hello, this is Transduction Signal on Dublab Radio. I'm your host, Trevarsi, along with Orly Gal. Join us each month on Dublab Radio. We will be joined by a guest. They will share a performance, a live performance with us, followed by a breakdown of their setup. We'll get into all their musical journey and all that great stuff. Orly, who do we have this month?
This month we have Mae Dawn, and she is from Baltimore, but she is based in Berlin right now, where she holds a residency with Trezor, and she has her own imprint called Rant and Rave, and I can't get to wait to go into like all the little details in and out of who she is.
Yes, she's a fantastic live artist as well, and let's bring her in. Mae.
Hello.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. This is incredible. And we have lots of questions for you because you've done a lot of things through your musical career.
Ah, thank you.
You're welcome. Before we get into all the questions and getting into your talking, we want to play and share your performance. Is there anything you want to say, or should we just hit play and go for it? What's your call?
Yeah, a little bit. Sure. So I wanted to go and have more fun because I just recently, like, been the past year and a half in Berlin building a studio, and I wanted to go and do more of an improv thing for the first half of it, making use of some of this amazing. So then the first half is the live improv, and then the second half is some of the tracks that I play live, most recently at New Year's Eve for Compound. So
excellent.
That's it.
Awesome. All right then. Let's mute up, and here we are, Mae Dawn.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. That was so sick.
It was raw. I was like, where is Berlin and where is my life right now? It was good.
Yeah. And I love the blend of, you know, the improv going into your tracks. I have so many questions for you. But for those who are listening, give us a run through of the gear that you're using.
Okay. So the live, I was using Rubicon, Metropolix, most notably, actually, the Qubit Prism, which I really, really, really like. And then Strymon Magneto. Then I had my Digitone was actually sequencing the Bro one.
Oh, okay.
And analog keys. And then the rhythm and the Octatrack. Octatrack, I have the all the percussion and hi-hats going through the Octatrack. So it's like, so I just keep basically the low end coming out of the rhythm.
Got you.
And then let's see what else. Yeah, that's it.
Nice. Yeah, it sounded great. I love the blend of it. You definitely have this, you know, and it's like a cross between this industrial style techno, a little bit of throwback to the 90s. I heard a little bit of like this Hooverish sort of stab happening midway through. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was great. And I love that you're not, I mean, I love the BPM, you know, it's rocking, it's grooving, but it's not, I mean, dare I say it's not 160 or 150, you know, like, I love right where you were going. And it was,
that's the magic BPM. That was 133.
Yeah. It was great.
But I actually, when I play live, I actually do play 138, but I wanted to slow it down for this because, like, I'm kind of going against the fucking fast BPMs right now.
Yeah, like, yeah, the trend. I mean, there's time and place for it, but no, I thought it was great. And I, you know, even your other live sets, I've listened. Also, you played Horror. Yeah, it's no. Been great. What were you gonna say?
I feel like there's a balance, right? Because I also play pretty heavy, and it doesn't always have to be like an insane BPM in order to hit dark and heavy and like moody. So if even when it's produced at that BPM, sometimes it sounds like super. Yeah, there's enough drive in there to keep you going and just like super engaged.
I think darker music should lend itself better to a slight slower BPM, actually. You get room for fucking groove and bass. The faster the BPM, the less time a kick has to go and really fucking, like,
feel
you know,
it. Yeah.
Where you can feel it. And, like, I've all the world to thank. When I met Adam, he's only given me like one production tip, and that was where, what to tune my kicks to. And he was like, cause you want to feel them. And actually before we met, they were actually too low. I actually had them around like 38, 39. So, okay. But like, yeah, it's like, you want to fucking feel it.
Right. Like feel it in your, you're right in the chest.
Oh, should I not be cussing? I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
You're totally good. Fine.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all grown ups and in the techno industry here.
Okay.
Yeah. No. So okay. So talk to us about your approach when you said you wanted to play the live jam. Did you start with sequencing in the modular first, or where did you start? Drums, melody. What was your approach?
I mean, it wasn't completely done like on the fly, except the first sequence that you heard that was already in there, and I already liked it. And it was just because I had to do a couple takes because my cameras were being really wonky. So yeah, it's like I always with production, with everything, I always start with the kick and the bass. So yeah.
Sorry, yes. I was gonna ask if you're traveling with the same setup that you were recording with.
obviously not the monster case. No, my live rig is analog rhythm, usually the Mark One, not the Mark Two, because it's easier. A Digitone and then a Noctotrack. So I'm working on putting together a live modular, because I really want to do pretty much kind of like what I just did, where I have like one track in the Octatrack that's completely done, and so I can go back and forth between a track that's already been structured to something right. that's improv. So nice. Yeah.
No, that's a, I think it's a great approach. That way it gives yourself a little break and you can have a moment to reset and think of something that you may want to write in that moment, what you're vibing, to kind of mm-hmm. go back and forth. I like how you're using the Octatrack. There's so many ways that people use it, mixer, sampler, looper. So you're actually putting parts in there and changing through the banks. And are you
exactly?
Okay.
I completely rely on parts and scenes between the faders.
Okay.
With the fader, yeah. So
nice. Go ahead, Orly.
Well, you were mentioning earlier that you took about a year to build your studio now in Berlin. I wanted to kind of get into a little bit of what prompted you, A, to build a studio for that long. it takes a while, I know, to like decide what you want in there and, you know, where you want to take things. So can you like walk us through a little bit of your process choosing the machines and what you wanted to do and accomplish with it?
Sure. So it kind of starts from when I moved here to Berlin. Literally, I left Brooklyn on March 14th of 2020. I was like running
away and, from the pandemic, right?
I mean, I was planning on moving here. I was supposed to move here on like April 2nd or April. Well, actually like a few days before April. And I had to sell most of what I had in the States. And so when I moved here, up until like basically studio wasn't usable until about February, March of last year. I was producing and mixing in Adam X's kitchen on a kitchen table. And so it's like, I just had my iMac. I didn't have any mod, I just had my electron pieces, my mono evolver, my analog keys, but those were packed away because I didn't even have room for them. So it's like, for me, not having a studio, it was torturous. It was absolutely like absolutely torturous, because the studio is my instrument, you know? And right. It started off as a blank room. I had it originally, it was with my friend Fade from Static Bloom, and he's not here anymore, because you know what, like, word of advice, if you can, try not to go and share a studio with another music gearhead, because you know what, it's just like, it's just, yeah.
Unless you have opposite schedules, I'm sure you both want to be in there.
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't.
And okay, so yeah, they're right there, it'd be difficult.
So it was a blank room. It was a completely raw room in like this like very raw warehouse. The warehouse is still extremely raw, and it's kind of funny. It's like you open up my door and like people are like, it's like walking into a different dimension because of how raw it is out there. But I started with like building the desk, and I was like, fuck it, I really wanted to build a modular. So then I just started getting modules, and then it just got out of hand, like it, you know, like it's known to happen.
Right. It does.
Yeah. But like I originally like I wanted for years to build a modular based on the synthesis technology Cloudtarium, E352, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was like the first voice I got. And nice. It's fun. It's still, I have so much to dive into. It's like, I got so much gear all at once to a degree that it's like, oh my God. It's like so much to learn, but I'm an Aries. And like, I just like to go and dive in like that. So I basically just built my dream studio. So,
did you find that, like, looking back? 'Cause I have a studio as well. And sometimes it's like, choices, right? Do you find that looking back when you just were working on that table, that kitchen table, that you really had an opportunity to really dive in and learn your electron boxes? And was there some kind of, you know, like bittersweetness to that? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, we love gear right here. I'm not.
At that point, I kind of already knew, I've learned some more new things, but like, you know, I spent years in Baltimore and years prior to even like going out and playing my first show, honing in my skills and learning synthesis and learning music production. So it's like, I mean, I've put in that 10,000, like over 10,000 hours of just tweaking and learning and going nuts for 18, 20 hour sessions back in Baltimore because I had nothing else to do.
Right. So you're ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we back up a little bit and talk about your actual journey going from Baltimore to New York City and then in Berlin, and what that looked like for you, both with machines and also with playing out in the scene?
And DJing as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, DJing came after. So where to start? I actually was in, I moved to Philadelphia. I dropped out of music school in Baltimore, and moved to Philadelphia. And that's where I initially put together my first studio and started diving in. But up there I was focused and trying to do, I kind of wanted to be like the girl version of Trent Reznor. And I went up there and I got really sucked into the indie rock world. And I just didn't, it was like, I just had this gear and it just wasn't the right time or just the right place for me. And then I ended up moving back to Baltimore. And then I was in Baltimore for, it was like 3 years. And I joined like this, it was like an email thread group thing for musicians, and we could share things. And I went and shared just this little jam I did on the Mono Evolver keyboard, which is my favorite. Nice.
So now we know your favorite piece of gear.
Yeah, you know, it's my, I've always called it my mean bastard synth. So I was still at this time trying to go and do and trying to put together basically essentially pop music. And I had around 2014, I had pretty much finished that project that I was calling Lily Wave. And I just decided to just have fun and noodle on my, I shared this little like sequence, little improv thing that I did on the Mono Evolver. And then this girl went and invited me to play a show, and then it was all over. And the first show I don't even think I used a drum machine. So it was just more of like an experimental thing. And then, let's see. I kind of realized that quickly that playing live and making people dance. It was a lot of fun. I played my first rave for this party called Vague Output. That was on February 13th, or it was like, it was 2015, February 2015.
Okay.
I played with Aura Halal and Ital. And then it was kind of like all over. A year later, when I was still in Baltimore, I went and released a Dark Wave project. And I went and did a whole tour for like 2.5 months around the United States. And
under a different moniker then?
Yeah, my first name was a name that was the name that was like my online moniker, which kind of stuck because like my first gig, they were like, oh, what can we call you? And I was like, I don't know, Pulse with Mod. Because that was my online moniker. And everyone, it's like, you know, I'd been in the online synth community for like many, many years. So,
right.
I'm terrible.
So might as well use something that maybe people would recognize you if they were in the city to check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I did that tour, and the first half of my set was like, you know, the pre-programmed stuff with analog keys, the rhythm. What else did I use? The Prophet O... No, yeah. Analog keys, rhythm. I can't even remember those two main things. Anywho, I went and... Oh, yeah, the Evolver. And the first half of my set was like the songs I'd sing. And then it would move into just doing more of a live PA thing. And I just had a lot more fun just, you know, making people dance.
Nice. Like just
and the
boxes.
Freedom and the freedom of improv too. And yeah. So 2017 rolled around, or it was 2017 to 2018. I had to get out of Baltimore because I was gonna do shit there. And so it was like I was either gonna move to LA or I was gonna move to New York. So I went and I was bartending at the time, and I was saving up every single penny. And the universe kind of decided Brooklyn for me because I was so tired driving to work one day that I ran into someone and I ended up totaling my car. The other car was actually fine, but my little Volkswagen Golf, but it was fucked. That was the universe going and telling me, go to Brooklyn, not LA. So then I go to Brooklyn, and that was in July. I moved to Brooklyn September. December, I played Synthicide. After my set, I walk out into the bar area at Bossa Nova Civic Club, and sure enough, lo and behold, there's Adam X. So
nice.
We're up there, and
And then here we are.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I thank you for being remembering pretty specific. I mean, dates. You know, it's so hard to go back through the history of the catalog of all the things we did. So it painted a very nice picture to bring us to this moment. So I appreciate it.
Thanks.
So now here you are in Berlin, and of course through there you're playing live. You've released on Sonic Groove. You had a release on Detroit Underground, if I remember correctly.
Yep, and as Pulse with Mod.
As Pulse with Mod. Okay. And now you have your own imprint, Rant and Rave. You've had a few releases. I saw you just have another release. You even had Lady Starlight on as well.
Colleen. Yes, I love Colleen. Colleen's
she's awesome.
Amazing.
Nice.
So it's Colleen. I had Codex Empire. I had Joe Farr. Coming up next is E-Cores. Then I have Samantha Togni. Then I have Valerie Ace. And then I'm going to hopefully be the following one. And then after that, it's going to be this girl who's a Fold resident called Andromeda.
Nice.
So,
what prompted the record label?
It was something I really wanted to do. I was going in a different direction as Adam at the time. And it just felt like it just, you know, wanting to have my own identity, because so far I've released, you know, I've released on Sonic Groove, Detroit Underground, Trezor with Adam. And it was really just wanting, you know, wanting my own own identity. And yeah. And also, I really want to push female artists too. So,
I like that. I noticed you, when you were listing the releases, it was a lot of female artists, which is fantastic. We need we need more of that. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yes. Well,
are you, are you enjoying?
It's like, it's what we should do. It's what we should do, you know?
Are you enjoying the back end of running the label and finding out like the business of music and all the little things that people don't really think about? I also opened a label last year. And so it's, you know, this whole road to discovery of all the things we don't really deal with as artists.
Honestly, there's a lot of it I fucking hate. It's like just going and like, for one, like just the whole process of like submitting the tracks to like the distributor and like everything having to be just like, you know, and then the digital is even like a little bit worse, but like little things like that, it's like it takes time, just, you know. But I love the curation, and I love all the artistic aspects about it, but I just hate the administrative, don't really care for the administrative stuff. So
makes sense, like the boring side of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. But...
So, okay. So you've mentioned your, pretty much your favorite piece of gear. What is your, and then you, when you were talking about, so going into improv and then playing tracks. So when you write your tracks, now you're at your writing your tracks on your hardware, how do you record them? Like, what is your, what's your process? Do you multi-track? Do you two-track it? Do you say, fuck it, I'm just two-tracking it? Like,
So Detroit Underground, that release, that was all multi-track live one shot. Because who likes editing? Because arrangement is like,
right,
not my least favorite part. but you know, since my first release on Sonic Groove, I anally go and like I'll record one kick, do it as one shot, and then put it out on the grid. Because like that was like one thing actually that Adam had told me. He was like, yeah, so your tracks are kind of like hard to play out because like, you know, they shift in tempo, and that's the freaking one thing about Electron that it's like, oh, I just want to go. And yeah, the clocks on the Electron gear are not exactly on time.
Right, like they sway, drift a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, they drift a little bit. So I go and I do it to the grid. In a perfect world, if, you know, I wouldn't care, but like with, for doing it for, you know, making music so that other DJs will go and play out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll go and I don't really multi-track now. I'll do like a multi-track test run of a track, like a demo, a raw demo, to see if like, you know, to get some ideas and like, okay. But like, yeah, no, it's, I anally go and I'll take like that baseline. I'll make like, you know, for example, the new tracks that for my live set, I recorded, the modular into Logic, and then, you know, I sliced them up, created sample chains and processed them a little bit and then dropped them back in. So it's like, I go and, yeah, I'm like really anal about like just focusing on that one sound and like honing it in.
Got
it. Yeah, because that's like another thing. I don't really like going in and doing automation after the fact. It's like I'd rather, it's just, I guess that's probably one of the reasons. It's like it's raw. I like it more raw.
Yeah, no, so, totally. So it's like the process of actually recording the hardware, but then just laying it out, like laying out a nice clean arrangement, but still it has the original recorded Element 5 into it. Nice.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what do you... So you DJ.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to choose between DJing and playing live, if you could only do one, what would you do?
Yeah, play live. In a perfect world, all I would have to do is play live. But, you know, I mean, I really love DJing too. That was kind of like a hard, like, I don't know.
Did you find you know? I love asking that question. Sorry, because it is such a difficult one. Orly, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's all good. I was going to ask if you find the crowd's response different to when you're DJing and to when you're playing live. Like, is there a more passionate crowd to what you do, or?
Yeah, when I'm playing live, like, people go nuts. When I'm DJing, I'm just another DJ. I mean, I have, and I've been working on developing, like, and involving my own sound with DJing. But, you know, especially when I play, like, Trezor, like, the crowd just, it's like, there's, you can't keep beat that give and take. It's even more so with playing live, with how I play. So it's like the give and take of the,
of the room and stuff, like
of the room and the people, yeah.
But when you're DJing, is it mostly your stuff, or you're also playing other people's music?
Hell no, no. I rarely actually DJ my own tracks, because that's if there's a time I will mess up a mix when I'm DJing, it's when I'm mixing my track.
it gets really boring when I'm like, okay, I gotta play my own tracks out. But like the diving in, the actual act of like virtual digging for music, for like, it's an exploration. I feel like it's like a, part of the process that is like so interesting about DJing versus playing live.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. It is. I also curate. It's like I curate what I play to the set that I play. Like, I was doing like mostly opening sets at Trezor last year. And I kind of really love the opening set, because it's like, even the booker there went and said it's the most important. It's the most important set of the night, because it sets the whole vibe. Right. So I really just love the whole like build up. And then I then will save it till the end of like getting like really heavy, and then leaving it. Like last time I DJed, it was Orphix that played after me. So, but my next set is the closing set. So now it's going to be that in reverse hard. And then, but yeah. So
I really like that in Berlin, you guys actually like go from like the peak and bring it down again. And here, sometimes you just like keep on going up and up and up and up and up. And like, you end up in like this insane note, and people are just like, oh my God, it's time to go home. It's like a relief. We don't actually have a calm down effect.
Yeah, and there's also something too I feel like is actually lacking everywhere, is when I first started going to raves, there was a chill out room. There's always like that chill out, like ambient room. Whatever happened to that?
I don't know.
That should be a thing again. And I pretty much most likely like LA has the doesn't have the chill down time, because they can't stay open till.
Well, I mean, we end up somewhere around, I mean, seven, so, six, yeah. Seven.
That's early.
That's early.
That's early.
I know. We don't have like 3-day benders here. You have to go from club to club and from place to place, and you chill out in the in-betweens, I guess. Yeah, but we don't, there's not a designated area for you to sit down and chill and like clean, especially with the 200 BPMs right now that everyone is like playing. Yeah, I'm hoping that things are going to start sloping down a bit. Yeah, but who knows?
Just start playing slower.
Yeah, you're right. Well, there is one party, like, but it's like you, I agree with you. It's like few, far in between. But it, at Movement, Erica's party, the tangent.
Universe, yeah, No Way Back.
No Way Back. Thank you. But yeah, they do have a specific chill out room, which I think is cool. Like, it kind of gives that.
Yeah, that party is magical. Scene.
Yeah, it is. Like, yeah, my favorite.
At that 2019, I went, and that was actually when I found out like that Adam was going to be putting out that first release, and I'd never stayed at a party. I like for that freaking long. I didn't want to leave. That was the first time I went to a party. I was just like, I don't want to leave.
Yeah,
and you know what? Thinking back
to the movement last year,
and then thinking back, it's like someone went and like offered me a drop of acid, and I was like, no. But next year, yes. And then what happened the following year?
Are you going to be a movement this year?
Are you going to
movement? You coming to movement?
No, I don't have a gig. So,
got you.
Another. I would love to, but you know,
so. You're kind of far away, so it's understandable.
Yeah, I'm coming to America. Let's see. I think my first gig is actually in LA on the first, June 1st. So
June.
Yeah. Okay.
We should be in town. Are you in town as well? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Yeah.
Yep. For sure. Cool. Looking forward to.
We'll be there.
Yeah, and I'll see you in Berlin the second week.
Super booth.
Yep. Super booth weekend. So I'll be there, and yeah. I think I saw you. Are you playing that weekend too?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge. I don't think so.
Maybe I read it wrong. But
yeah. No.
Like, okay. Well, either way, we're going to connect. So I'm looking forward to it.
Sweet. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You got to come to the studio.
I know. I need to see this place in person. It's beautiful.
I'm going in September. So I need to see that studio.
Yes. Yeah. Have to come. I made it like, so it's like really nice and like, it's like cozy and it's
so important. You spend like, I don't know, a million hours a day in the studio trying to produce and get inspired. So like, if the environment is not conducive, that you don't want to be there. There's so many studios that are like, the lighting is not right, or it's too dark, or I don't know. Sometimes when you go produce in somebody else's studio, it's like,
So going back to your music, what are some of your musical influences? Who? I know it's such a vast question, but
oh boy, I should have thought of this. I should have thought of this question ahead of time.
Well, you started with Trent Reznor, which I can actually hear in your production. Still.
Yeah.
It's funny because, like, now, Adam. Like, Adam. Also, The Mover. Let's see. Adam Hart, I love. I've been listening to a lot of old Hart House records, pre-trance era. Let's see. Obviously, like, a lot of the R&B. I've been having fun also, like, I started collecting records. So, you know. Perk. Ollie's great. Mm-hmm. But I'm also leaning towards going into a different direction. And actually, honestly, Colleen, huge inspiration.
Yeah.
Colleen, Dasha. Let's see. Adam. I love Panacea. yeah, this is where my ADHD self is like, I can't think. Ding, ding, ding.
No, it's hard. You know, there are so, I mean, you get influence. I'm sure there's artists that you recently come upon and hear their music. And so I understand, but I love asking the question.
I know I'm going to botch the pronunciation. Oxygeno, he like had a release on Mord. And now I've gone back and I've gotten a lot of his catalog. He's great. Okay.
Aurelie, are you familiar with?
No, but I will tell you what, I have this issue that I download so much music every time I play, and I've never played the same set, so I go into like rabbit holes. So for me, it's the sound rather than, unfortunately, and this is horrible, but I don't know people's names. Unless I really stumble upon somebody like you and go into a super deep dive. But if I hear it, I know who it is. I just don't.
No, yeah. Yeah. You know, like Robert Hood. You know what? Anthony Rother. I absolutely love Anthony Rother. And
love him
I really
as well.
I wanna so like when I was doing those original like live sets, I wasn't techno. It was more like electro. What I was doing at first.
Okay.
But not completely, because I didn't know about techno until like 2014, which is really kind of like sad, because in Baltimore it was Buzz, and it was mostly like, it was a lot of, I just remember at the time I was going to parties in the early 2000s, it was a lot of like drum and bass and fucking trance. So yeah, I kind of then quickly went back into the goth industrial scene, because I was just kind of freaked out about the candy ravers being all lying on the floor and like not dancing and whatnot. So like, I didn't know about techno until like 2014. And then I discovered EBM techno, and I was like, oh my God, this is it. Fuck yeah.
Nice. It's like a nice cross for where you were to kind of go writing.
Yeah. So that. Then like, you know, Terrence Fixmer McCarthy, oh my goodness, now my brain is going blank. Yeah,
it's okay. I know there's so many. So we're at the top of the hour, and I have one, and Aurelie, unless you have a question, I have one more question. Do you have a question?
No, go ahead.
Quick, what would be the advice to give to somebody who's starting out? They want to just start playing live. What would be your advice?
What would be my advice? Oh, this is a good one. Oh my goodness, this is a really, really, really good question, because there's so many things. Know your gear really, really well. Use a DJ mixer.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
That would be
any particular DJ mixer?
I mean,
and what?
Just so you can mix. I mean,
yeah. So you can mix, because of reason being, when you're going and playing, and you're playing usually between two DJs, right? When I first started, and I know a lot of other people also do this, I mean, I like even Orphix, but they make it work. Use like a normal non-DJ, you know, mixer. And you get more headroom on a DJ mixer. So you're going to be able to like have the equivalent kind of sound. Yeah, use a DJ mixer and utilize, you know, all the channels, and use the mixer as an instrument, because that is the most important instrument, actually, even with a live set. And it doesn't matter. I use the Pioneer currently, but I've got a Zone 96 that I'm gonna like transition to. I don't know. Maybe I might sell it and just buy more modules. But
of using the mixer, using it as an instrument. That's great advice, actually.
Yeah, nice. Because like, and it really, really, really helps and makes the difference with the levels. So when you're playing between two DJs, so it's just as powerful. So
nice. Cool. Thank you for that. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your time. This was great. Like, I really enjoyed the conversation.
Same here.
Thank you.
So we're at the top of the hour. Thank you so much. This is Transduction Signal. I am your host, Traversy, along with
Orly Gale.